This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday at this time, and we appreciate same. Guy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Guy, obviously the Trump administration is moving really quick on a lot of different fronts. One of those, it's clear to me now, and you point out that President Trump doesn't seem to like offshore wind very much. In fact, he has taken some, I guess you could call them dispositive actions against the wind industry.
Yeah, as this is one of those things where you sort of scratch your head a bit. Louisiana was gearing up to be a big leader in offshore wind, and unfortunately, reality is entering the picture. Offshore wind is seemingly risk-free in that you don't have the challenges of things that are onshore. But what the president has looked at and what his advisors are looking at is it is incredibly expensive. It's about three times as expensive as onshore wind. So if we're thinking about wind power, it certainly makes sense, but it makes a tremendous amount of sense in West Texas, where the wind always blows and where you're fairly close to population centers. The challenge with offshore wind is when you look at the full cycle, all the cost from build to destroy at the end and recycle if possible, it's about three times as expensive to put wind offshore. Now, the only way offshore wind works is with a mandate, and the mandate is that utilities must purchase the wind power whenever it's generated. And, you know, certainly if you're a wind power producer, this makes sense because you want to sell your wind power. But what it does do, and what I think people that designed the programs actually knew in their hearts, was when you have a mandatory purchase, it also kills base power. And what I mean by that is if you're running a coal-powered plant or a natural gas-powered plant or even a nuclear plant, you figure you're going to be able to sell your power, 70, 80% of the time at market rates. Well, as wind comes on, you're being told by utilities, we don't need any power right now. Now, you can't shut a nuclear power plant down. That's not an option. You can fairly quickly shut down a gas-powered plant and somewhat less quickly a coal-fired plant. But the challenge is, as every bit of new wind power comes in, it makes the base power uneconomic. So if you get enough wind power coming in, the base power plants that were designed with the thought that they could sell power 70% or 80% of the time are no longer economical, and they begin to close. And then this makes the grid unreliable because the wind doesn't blow all the time. And that was sort of the problem Texas had a few years ago when it froze, and they ran out of wind power, and they had let their base power decline. So, in a nutshell, what the president said is wind power on its own doesn't make economic sense without giant subsidies. And we're just not going to grant new subsidies, and we're also not going to do new leasing. So he put in an executive order that said, we're not leasing any more offshore sites or federal onshore sites for wind power.
Is this another example where this doesn't make economic sense without the subsidies on the front?
Oh, absolutely. End? You know, wind power is something America has always used. If you think back to the classic Westerns and you have the cowboys coming over the hill, every single farm out west had a windmill. So this is not new. We've used windmills. The Dutch have used windmills. They make tremendous sense in places where the wind blows a lot. So the economics of wind are real, but they work only in certain places. Now, the missing element is storage. And if you want to, you know, promote wind power, you have to have storage. Because there are times when the wind's blowing, it's generating lots of power, but the grid literally doesn't want it. And in Europe, we have zero-cost power, even negative power cost, when there's too much wind power. And the challenge is all of the onshore people, like the natural gas folks, are then driven out of business. If you have enough competing wind power that's been subsidized, then the base power people can't make money. And they'll ultimately close. Now, for the people that view carbon as the greatest threat to the world, that's fine. They're okay with that. And they say, well, people will just have to endure those challenges. But absent some policy changes, offshore wind just doesn't make any economic sense, particularly in the Gulf where the wind doesn't blow that much. You know, for us as a shipbuilding state, it would be nice if it did make economic sense. But at this moment, the economics without a big subsidy just aren't there.
And I have to imagine that we can anticipate more of this, right? I mean, as they begin to look at other subsidies that are made by the federal government, whereby these industries are not going to survive without them, especially as a startup.
Yeah, I think what we've always said about environmental issues is you need rational pricing. And if we come to a consensus in the U.S. that carbon is the greatest threat ever, we need to actually have a carbon tax and then stand back and let the technologies compete. And then you would have efficient allocation of capital. We're facing a challenge where there's only so much capital, and if you allocate it inefficiently, You don't have it to do other investments. And Ørsted, which is the big wind power company and did the first successful wind power off the East Coast, and successful, I mean, actually connected to the grid and built it, has walked away from a number of U.S. projects and said, absent more subsidy, it just doesn't work. Our costs have gone up. There are environmental issues that we've been sort of dodging and hoping not to look at. And we don't see how we can make new offshore wind in the United States make economic sense. And they've literally done impairment charges and walked away from their investments to the tune of over $1 billion and just said, without subsidies at a greater level, without you consumers paying higher utility cost, we just can't make this work.
Folks are a little confused. I've got a number of texts here. Why can't we store electricity? Well, we can, but we store it in batteries, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The physics is electricity cannot be stored as electricity. You have to convert it to something else. And the simplest conversion is to batteries. But battery banks are very, very expensive. They're not environmentally free because you have a lot of minerals that go into them. A lot of them come from places that aren't friends of ours. The other ways to store electricity are to use physics and to store them either by elevating water. You literally pump water up a hill into a high reservoir, and then it will come back down later as a turbine power. Or you can use it to do things like desalinate water. And, you know, if California wants to have wind power, that would be a natural tie-in because they have a shortage of fresh water. Now, it's expensive. It's more expensive to desalinate ocean water than it would be to build a pipeline from the Mississippi to California. But you can do it. You just need to do it in different ways. It can't be stored as electricity. It has to be stored as either batteries or as in some form of physics by lifting things up or by using some other technology to create something else that requires a lot of energy, like desalinization.
I want to pivot just a little bit back to our original conversation as it relates to subsidies. There's a breaking story right now that because of some of the cuts to U.S. aid, it could potentially harm rice farmers here in Louisiana. And I want to play devil's advocate just for the sake of the conversation. Why would we be concerned, or why would we want to subsidize overproduction of anything? And if we do so for one group of folks, why are we not doing it for everybody?
Well, once you get into subsidies, it's hard to ever get out of them because the people receiving the subsidies become dependent. If they're large enough, then they'll have their hand out. In years past, we used to have a law called PL 480, and what it said was any foreign food aid had to be American food shipped on American barges with American ships to wherever. Now, this appeals to people that own American ships, American barges, and American farmers, but it was incredibly expensive. You know, we're delivering food aid at like 10 times the cost that it would cost if we bought food in the most efficient place. So I think you need to separate the two and say, you know, there are genuine crises around the world that the U.S. needs to help deal with. And when we do that, I think the State Department needs to be the one that says, look, this is a country that has a crisis. This is what we're going to give. We're not going to help forever, because if you help forever with free food, you literally kill a country's agricultural sector. It's called help that hurts. First you kill the farmers, then the suppliers, the farm vendors, and when eventually you quit providing free food, the country's worse off than when you started. But we need and we should help people that are dealing with a catastrophe or a crisis, but it should always have an end point. And the idea that the USAID cuts will somehow help hurt U.S. Local rice farmers, I think that's a political extension of just opposition to any sort of cuts. I think a rationalization of the program makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't terminate it, but I'd be more careful, and I'd be more certain that what we do is actually helpful and does have an endpoint rather than destroying the country's economy.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of, it's a little counterintuitive to me that we would subsidize overproduction, right? I mean,
yeah, and that's
everybody else is in a competitive world, and you try to maximize that intersecting line as to what you produce as opposed to what you can sell, right?
The American farmers are by far the most efficient in the world. So given a level playing field, the ability to compete, they'll do very well. And we still have a lot of different agricultural regulations that restrict the amount of acreage that can go into peanuts and other protected crops. So, once there was a Freedom to Farm bill, and it really didn't get too far, but I think opening American agriculture to real competition and a real level playing field would probably make more sense than trying to subsidize isolated groups.
Yeah, I mean, because it just seems to me that this is just another kind of out-migration of tax dollars into something that, if I'm just, and I'm not thinking, you know, about the impact to the American farm, just looking at it from a numbers perspective, it doesn't make sense to me. And I just have a real difficult time wrapping my head around it.
No, it doesn't. And look, we as Americans are nostalgic for the era of the small farm. And the small farm is pretty much gone, unfortunately. We have much more efficient, bigger farms. And they don't need subsidies. But my cousin's a farmer, and I remember once he built a new barn. I said, well, what is this for? He said, Agriculture Department came up with a bizarre program where if you built a new barn, it was essentially free. He said, so I'm going to use this to store my classic cars. Now, that didn't have much to do with farming, and I'm glad he has a place to put his classic cars. But as a taxpayer, you know, it's like, well, you know, why didn't I get a special place to put my boat? But, yeah. You know, farmers do have that nostalgic attachment to the American psyche. And look, I'm not opposed to the farmers, but I don't think we should be subsidizing much of anything because it ultimately is not productive and doesn't help the overall economy. And certainly right now, the U.S. can't afford to waste tax money on anything.
Yeah, and as a W-2 employee, you'd like to have about 6 or 7 tax write-offs as opposed to literally none, right?
Oh, yeah. And
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things
that I would advocate for.
Yeah, W-2 employees sometimes feel like big ducks flying into the duck blind on opening day. It's like, boom.
Over a baited field. It's like, it's even worse. But anyway, all right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we'll talk about the crypto hoax that caused a Kansas bank to fail. Stay with us.